Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Lurie, Jesse Bell, Lauren Tucker, and Dinah Jansen. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Lurie, and here are your local news headlines. A recent study led by researchers from Kingston Health Sciences Center, the Kingston General Health Research Institute, and Queen's University has uncovered some of the factors contributing to the rising demand for pediatric urgent care in the Kingston area. The research, led by Dr. Daniel Mulder, a pediatrician at KHSC and assistant professor at Queen's, used urgent care data from KHSC's Children's Outpatient Clinic, tracking pediatric urgent care visits from 2006 to 2022. Since the mid-2010s, there has been a significant increase in demand for pediatric urgent care, putting added pressure on health teams. To provide us with deeper insights into the surge in urgent care visits and what they mean for our health system, CFRC was joined by Dr. Mulder. Here is a bit of our conversation. Your research was to get to the bottom of the increase in demand for pediatric urgent care. What was the scale of this increase in demand, and how did it contribute to the pressures on our health system that we've been seeing over the last few years?
Yeah, so we were worried because we're seeing more and more demand for urgent care for children here in Kingston. And we were really concerned that, you know, this was a multifactorial problem. We were suspicious that there were a few specific issues driving this. So we looked at the data over the past, you know, decade and a half and found there was quite the increase, as we thought. But some of the interesting pieces that we found that were not as obvious were that visits were lasting quite a bit longer. You know, so if you do the math, you take the number of visits increasing over time, and then you add in that each visit is longer and the amount of care delivered each day is increased quite a bit. So then we said, well, what could there be that, you know, would be driving that change, and what's changing in society, you know? And we can only really analyze the data we have. And so we looked at the data, which was quite rich. And we saw that, you know, over time, we were seeing more patients with infections, which isn't that obvious. I think, you know, thinking back to 2019, right? But after COVID hit and, you know, we saw lots and lots of patients with COVID, we knew that this was driving demand, but we actually see that increased demand for children with infections coming to urgent care has increased maybe probably 2017, 2018. So it actually happened before COVID that we were seeing a lot more kids with infections. We also see much more patients without a primary care provider. So without a family doctor or nurse practitioner, you know, seeing them regularly, doing healthcare check-ins, these kind of things. So these patients tend to be a bit sicker and tend to then come to need urgent care, you know, in much higher proportions when they don't have a family doctor or someone like that supporting them. And then finally, we saw that the patients had increasing complexity. So we see this as pediatricians, but, you know, people on the street may not sort of appreciate this change, is that over time, we're getting better and better at treating complicated conditions with more and more equipment. And so we're much more likely to see children with complications of feeding tubes, breathing apparatuses that they need, wheelchairs, these kind of things that are going along. And often patients have more than one piece of technology supporting their life. And so when those things stop working, they come to urgent care. And so we're seeing more of that. So these things all added together, the increase in infections, the decrease in primary care access, and the increase in complexity of the patients, to mean that visits are more frequent and they're lasting longer, and that's driving this demand. So that was very helpful, I think, to find that information out.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned, I think a lot of people think of this as sort of a COVID thing, but you mentioned this sort of started accelerating in the mid-2010s. I was wondering if you could speak to some of the reasoning behind that, why we were seeing more complex cases and more infections during that time period to now.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the data only tells us really what we can pull out of the urgent care visits. And so in terms of why we're seeing increased infections, this is not clear to us. And we want to look into this more because, you know, There's a few possible reasons. It could be just an increase in circulating infections in society sort of overall. It could be that, you know, we're seeing more and more patients coming to urgent care with coughs and colds because they maybe don't have a family doctor or someone to check in with, you know, so they're coming to urgent care for visits that, you know, coughs and colds that would go normally to their family doctor. They don't have a family doctor, so then they come see us, and that drives the demand as well. So that was probably happening prior to 2020 and COVID. And then the complexity issue is a challenging one because, you know, we're getting better at treating patients, which is wonderful, right? We're getting more technologies available. We're keeping patients well and out of hospital more, which is wonderful. But that means that those patients at home need care and they're complicated. And so they come to see a pediatrician at the urgent care center rather than, you know, going to their family doctor potentially or to the emergency department.
And what kind of solutions do you foresee for this kind of issue?
So, you know, this is a resource planning issue, I think, you know, and really the goal of pediatrics and healthcare in general, and when it comes to children, you know, is to raise healthy kids. And this is a much better thing for everyone, not just the patient, but society in general, if we raise healthy kids rather than try to treat sick adults, you know. And so we're trying to find ways that we can help the people who, you know, distribute resources for healthcare make decisions. So, you know, we've identified these factors and we think that targeting those as early as possible would be best, right? So looking for ways to decrease circulating infections, ways to better support complex patients, you know, who absolutely need to see pediatricians when things go wrong, when they're not feeling well. You know, these patients need access to pediatricians and also access to primary care for most children, if not all children, right? So we think that this is probably a great way to prevent these increased burdens on urgent care centers and emergency departments, is to have primary care access for children. And this is something that, you know, it's not news, but now we have data to support it and data from our local region to support that this need is there. And so I think these patients are going to be the best way to solve this increased demand problem.
I know you're thinking about doing more research across Ontario and perhaps across Canada. Have you seen similar studies done in other regions, or will this sort of be new in a bigger way?
Yeah, we are very lucky as Canadians to have this semi-centralized healthcare system, right? So, you know, regardless of your sort of political stance and your thoughts on why and how our healthcare system should be built, we have the data from the healthcare system in a fairly centralized way. And so, you know, when I talk to other pediatric researchers in the US, they're very jealous of the data set we have. The system just isn't centralized there. And we think this problem of increased demand and decreased primary care access is happening all over the world. So there's data from the UK and there's data from the US, especially thus far, to support that this is an ongoing issue across the board. And there's many systemic problems with, you know, healthcare resources. It's a limited pool of resources and an increasing demand over time as our population gets more complex and we are getting better at treatments and we have larger populations. And so looking at the data for Ontario, I think will be the next big step. We don't have that data yet, but it will be fairly straightforward to do this research because the structure of the data we looked at from our urgent care center is going to be the same as the data structured from other centers. And so expanding this research won't, you know, be an overnight solution that we can find, but we will be able to look at the large set of data once we get access in a fairly similar way. And so that will be helpful. And we think that we'll find the same trends across the board, as that's what we're hearing in the news. That's what we're seeing in, you know, government reports, that there's increased demand across the board, not just for children, but hopefully our expanded work will be able to show some of the factors that are doing that, you know, in making this change and driving this demand.
That was Dr. Daniel Mulder with KHSC sharing key insights from his team's recent study on the increase in pediatric urgent care demand in Kingston. For those interested in exploring the study further, you can read it in the PLOS Digital Health Journal. The Murney Tower Museum is preparing to celebrate 100 years as a landmark in Kingston next year, kicking off fundraising efforts with a concert on site this weekend. An iconic landmark in the city, Murney Tower is a stone defensive tower located on the west shore of Kingston Harbor. The tower is part of a larger naval defense system built in 1846. It is renowned as one of the most sophisticated Martello towers built in British North America. The site has been a museum since 1925, and on Saturday, September 10th, they will be hosting Toronto-based singer-songwriter Julie Arsenault for a concert to celebrate their centennial celebrations in 2025. I sat down with Emma McGregor Mitchell, a member of the Murney Tower Museum team, to learn more about this weekend's event and their fundraising efforts. Would you like to introduce yourself and your role with Murney Tower?
Yeah. So, hello, my name is Emma, and I am currently a museum assistant at Murney Tower Museum. I've been here for the summer as one of their summer placement students. And I mostly do marketing and communications at the museum, as well as kind of front desk admin type stuff.
Awesome. And I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about these upcoming centennial celebrations for Murney Tower and your very first fundraising event that you're holding this weekend.
Absolutely. So 2025 is going to mark 100 years of Murney Tower being a landmark in Kingston. And we're currently fundraising to have a bunch of free events and opportunities and celebrations for the community. So our centennial project includes things such as an illustrated children's book. We're planning to have storytelling workshops, illustration workshops for children, as well as we're actually planning a big art exhibition in collaboration with Modern Fuel Art Center called Echoes of Time, Reimagining Murney Tower, that we're hoping to kind of fundraise to pay for as well, that will encourage local artists to kind of reflect on the Murney Tower and its history in Kingston. And then our main event that's kind of coming up to fundraise for this is actually a really interesting concert. The Murney Tower Museum will be collaborating with a boutique record label from Barcelona to host a fundraising concert, which will bring Toronto-based singer and songwriter Julie Arsenault to Murney Tower to actually perform a show. And that'll be on September 7th.
Very cool. And I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that artist pick there and how it fits for Murney Tower.
Absolutely. So actually her record label reached out to us and This will be her debut in Canada. Her record label is from Barcelona and she's done a lot of her music kind of based there, even though she's originally Toronto based. So she's going to be performing here in her first Canadian show for the first time. And we just thought that she really fit the space. She's more of an indie artist and she prefers to do kind of personal shows with all attendees. So she's going to be performing on our gun platform for about a 45-minute performance during the night.
Awesome. And from what I gathered there, there's a lot of very arts-focused fundraising happening. I was wondering if you could get into where the inspiration for all these events kind of came from and the inspiration for the concert kind of came from.
Absolutely. I think Murney Tower Museum has always been Kingston's small local museum. We're actually the oldest one in Kingston. And so a lot of our focus is to really bring the community to come interact with history. But we also want to, you know, go outside that and expand to more interesting and inclusive activities. So art is one of the ways you can kind of connect with a lot of people, but still do some really interesting storytelling that intersects with, you know, history and all that.
Yeah, for sure. And again, that is coming up this weekend. How can folks learn more and attend the concert?
Absolutely. So we have tickets available on our website, murneytower.com. If you just check it out, it'll be the top thing there. An intimate show with Julie Arsenault is the title. And then the tickets are available also at Zephy. And if you just want to come in day of, they are $25. You can just come in and hopefully our staff will be able to process a payment for you.
Once again, that was Emma McGregor Mitchell with the Murney Tower Museum on their first fundraising event for their celebration of 100 years as a museum in 2025. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Lauren Tucker with your CFRC Arts Desk.
Thanks, Christina. Here's your arts and culture news for today. Beginning September 3rd and running until the 14th at the Union Gallery is home again, Queen's Fine Art Alumni Exhibit. Marking 55 years of fine art education at Queen's, this exhibition of visual artwork from fine arts and art education alumni will be a showcase, celebration, and an expression of the hopes for the future of the program. This exhibition includes work from over 70 alumni and is free for the public to peruse during open hours in the main space. Exhibition hours may vary, and you can learn more at uniongallery.queensu.ca. Coming up at the Agnes Hetherington Art Center is a week of orientation events lined up from September 16th to 21st. On September 16th from 2 to 4 p.m. is a sound-making workshop with acclaimed music collaborative, LAL. As a bonus to this event, tickets to this group's performance the following evening are available for a sliding scale $10 to $20 admission. On September 20th from 4 to 8 p.m. in conjunction with the Union Gallery is the Queer Karaoke Dance Party. On September 21st is a workshop for educators of all kinds from 1 to 4 p.m. illustrating a no borders approach to teaching and teaching cross-cultural relations and solidarity. Last but certainly not least, on the 21st of September is a screening of the new Afadai film based on the destruction of Palestinian archives that, quote, aims to create a counter-narrative to this loss, presenting a form of cinematic sabotage that seeks to reclaim and restore the looted memories of Palestinian history. All of these events are free to attend, but registration is required, and you can learn more at agnes.queensu.ca. Registration for fall term programming at the Kingston School of Art is now open, including programs for youth and adults, as well as workshops and summer camps. This includes adult classes in drawing, fiber and textile arts, mixed media, painting, printmaking, and sculpture, and youth programs for kids ages 6 to 16 and families. There are also a variety of 1 and 2 day workshops available for registration. For more information and to register, visit ksoa.info. Coming up at Modern Fuel are 3 new exhibitions beginning September 14th and running until November 9th. In the main gallery is In the Shadow of the Sun by regional artist Alyssa Scott. In the State of Flux gallery is A Common Babble by extra-regional artist Nikita FK. And in the Window gallery is Artwork Care Work, Portraits of Artists/Mothers by extra-regional artist Claire Drummond. For more, visit modernfuel.org. And the full lineup is now available for Kingston Writers Fest 2024, running this year at the Screening Room and across Kingston from September 25th to 29th. This year's program includes events for adult writers and youth, including panels, trivia, open mics, writers' retreat events, festival field trips, and more. Tickets and packages are on sale now, and the student rush seats are available to some events. You can visit kingstonwritersfest.ca for all that and more. Every Monday at Daft Brewing, Bon Evans hosts Music Trivia Mondays at 7 p.m. Put your music knowledge to the test in 4 or more rounds of trivia, whether you're going it solo or in a team with clips, questions, and more. The winning team walks away at the end of the night with a $50 gift card and bragging rights, so be sure to check it out for a Monday night of music and fun. And coming up at Kingston's Independent Cinema, The Screening Room, you can catch special screenings of Coraline in its 15th anniversary until September 5th. 2006's Little Miss Sunshine will be showing until the 4th, and Ghostbusters will be showing the 2nd, 3rd, and 5th. The results of their 2024 Moviegoers poll are also now available at their website, so you can keep an eye on which classic winning films are incoming to the big screen. There are also new arrivals and special screenings all the time, so be sure to check back at screeningroomkingston.com for all of your cinema adventures. That's all I've got for you on Arts Desk for today. Now I'll turn it over to Jesse Bell at the Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk, and this is your sports report for Monday, September 2nd, 2024. The Queens Gaels football team was in action on Saturday for their home opener against the McMaster Marauders at Richardson Memorial Stadium. The Gaels were in control of all three facets of the game early, with their special teams unit yielding consistently good return yardage, their defense stifling a potent MAC offense, and the Queens offense putting up 2 touchdowns in the first quarter and a field goal to give them a 17-0 lead. That lead would only grow as Jared Kasari scored his 3rd touchdown of the first half to put the Gaels up 24-0. McMaster would rally with an interception on defense and a late touchdown to make it a 24-7 deficit at the end of the first half. McMaster came out hot in the second half, slowly but surely chipping away at Queen's massive lead. They would add a touchdown to make it a 24-15 ball game before Tyler Mullen would kick a 42-yard field goal through the uprights to give the Gaels a double-digit 27-15 lead. McMaster was undeterred as they continued to chip away at the Queen's lead. McMaster would score a 5-yard touchdown on a jet sweep to drop the deficit to 5 with all the momentum in their favor. A quick stop by the McMaster defense gave the Marauders one final chance to win the game with less than a minute to go, but Justin Pace would make this phenomenal play to seal the victory for the Gaels.
looking for the pass on the right-hand side. Snap, he's taken, but he makes the pass. Able to make his way up.
Football!
Queens gets it! There we go!
Justin Pace, his second generated turnover, and that might be the dagger. Keegan Hall takes one heck of a hit. He completes the pass, and Justin Pace, with his face in the right place, knocks that football loose and might have knocked Mac back to Hamilton with an 0-2 record.
And with that defensive play by number 44, Justin Pace, the Gaels would prevail, taking home their first victory of the season 27-22 over a very strong McMaster Marauders football team. The Gaels will be in action next on Saturday, September 7th at Richardson Memorial Stadium, where they'll be hosting the York Lions. Kickoff is scheduled for 4 p.m., but do tune in at 3:45 p.m. for the Something in the Water pregame show. This concludes your sports report for Monday, September 2nd, 2024. This is Jesse Bell signing off and wishing you all nothing but the best.
This is Christina Laurie coming in with your CFRC weekly traffic report. Pavement rehabilitations will take place along Highway 401 between Westbrook Road to beyond the Highway 15 overpass and on the Sir John A. McDonald overpass. This work will consist of various lane and ramp closures over the next several months. Coming up this week, there will be lane and ramp closures on Highway 401 eastbound and westbound at Sydenham Road to Gardner's Road. These will take place September 3rd, 4th, and 5th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. The Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard ramp will be closed on September 4th and 5th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. as well. PSBC wishes to advise users that the LaSalle Causeway is still fully closed to motorists, cyclists, and pedestrians until further notice. In other road closures to look out for this week, Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert closed until December 31st for construction. St. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. For more project details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th closed until October 31st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick closed until November 15th to accommodate a water main replacement. King Street, Plastarms to north end of King closed until September 30th for the construction of new storm and roadbed. The road will be open to local traffic. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until September 27th for downtown Kingston BIA activations. Union Street, Victoria to Albert, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. For more project details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. University Avenue, Union to Earl, closed for the removal of debris from the Queen's JDUC project. Wellington Street, Earl to Gore, closed until September 10th for a new water service installation. In parking disruptions, the Hanson Memorial Parking Restoration Project is still underway. The work is planned to finish in late December 2024. Work will be completed in phases to allow the building to remain open to public parking for the duration of the project. It's anticipated that no more than 50% of the available 271 parking spaces will be closed at any time. There is also parking availability at the Chown Memorial and Robert Bruce Memorial parking garages in the two adjacent blocks to the west. To wrap up your traffic report for this evening, you can also expect delays on the following streets due to construction: Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles, Edwin to Princess, Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, Highway 2, Abbey Don to St. Lawrence, John Counter Boulevard at Montreal, Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard at Bath, and Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard at Princess. To learn more about any of these delays and the associated projects, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. That is all for your CFRC Weekly Traffic Report, and next up is your events and concerts calendar.
Thank you so much. And now it's time for the CFRC Community Concerts and Events Calendar. Have a concert or event you would like listed on our airwaves and on our website? Drop us a line at cfrc.ca. On Monday, September 2nd, you can head on over to the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. to enjoy music by Cameron Wyatt, the lead guitarist and vocalist for local band Casador. On Tuesday, September 3rd, Eric Urin and Megan Ballow are playing live music by donation at the Cove Inn from 5 to 10 p.m. And also on Tuesday, The Buckle welcomes Courtney Kane for some live country music from 8 to 11 p.m. On Wednesday, September 4th, folks can also enjoy a free open mic show at the Cove Inn with Sean McCullough and friends. You can also travel on the new Wolf Islander 4 to Marysville and enjoy an open mic night with Mike Rapkins at Hotel Wolf Island from 7 to 10 p.m. for free and take in music, poetry, storytelling, comedy, dance, and more. Musiki Cafe also welcomes Frank Ryan on September 4th for a live show starting at 8 p.m. on Wednesday night, while folks can also have some karaoke fun at the Mansion starting at 9 p.m. On Thursday, September 5th, from 8:30 to midnight, dive in for the Royal Jam, a free multi-genre open mic event at Blue Martini. Also on September 5th, Clear Breeze will perform groove-oriented jazz and bossa nova classics at Hotel Wolf Island for free from 6 to 10 p.m. And on Thursday as well, Stage Rage is on at Stages Nightclub starting at 9 p.m. On Friday, September 6th, you can check out Red Compass Rose and Rev Zed for only $6 at the Mansion from 7 p.m. till midnight. You can also catch Nison and Bad Fortune in concert at the Memorial Center for free during the Kingston Ribfest and Craft Beer Show from 4:30 to 9 p.m. The Celtic Kitchen Party are also playing a free show at Tiernanog on September 6th from 9 p.m. to midnight, featuring lots of great Celtic, Irish, and Scottish music covers and originals. And Christopher Jackson and friends are playing upbeat rock and old country tunes for free from 7 to 10 p.m. at Blue Martini. On Saturday, September 7th, get ready to stomp it out on the Broom Factory's dance floor with the return of Elliot Brood. Visit Flying V Productions for ticket info for the show, running 7:30 to 10 p.m. Also on the 7th, the Free Association Blues Band featuring Mike Farrell, Spencer Evans, Ian Woodward, Bones Bowering, and Scott Meganson will take place at Hotel Wolf Island for free from 6 to 9 p.m. And the Celtic Kitchen Party with the Tone Cats are taking the stage on Saturday night at Kingston Ribfest at the Memorial Center, a free show starting at 4:30. And on Sunday, September 8th, local legends Chris and Dee are playing a free show with Ray Spoon at Hotel Wolf Island from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Also on Sunday, you can check out Heavy Pocket and Frank Ryan for free at Ribfest at the Memorial Center from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And that night, The Real McKenzie's, Doghouse Rose, Pound Salt, and Left on Bowery are playing a big show from 7:30 to midnight at the Mansion. Tickets are $25.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.